I've got on the phone with me right now Andrew Crust. Andrew Crust is the newly appointed music director of the Lima Symphony Orchestra. First of all, Andrew, hello and congratulations to you.
Thank you very much. It's good to be on.
So you were one of seven different finalists. I mean, they had over 180 folks that applied for this position. You were one of seven finalists. You came here last season, conducted a concert that was sort of like a tryout for you. Can you give us a little rundown of what the experience was like and when and how you found out that you were the one who was the victor?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's a very strange and yet I think very thorough process that we go through. And, you know, all of my colleagues that came to have their week with the orchestra are fantastic. And in the end, it's really all about a personality match and sort of a vision match. And it's kind of like a blind date, you know. Both of us are, I'm learning about the community and the orchestra, and they're learning about me, and it was a really great fit. They had our schedules absolutely jam-packed with meetings with donors and community members and board members, and went all over town. And it's just really a way to expose me to all the great things about this community, to see if it's the right fit. So, of course, then the most important moment was, how do I work with the orchestra? And I found that the orchestra was just so excited for this move forward, and they were so collaborative, and it's been a lot of fun this week to be working with them.
Yeah, you mentioned working with them this week. You're getting ready for that first concert, which happens on November 28th. Well, first of all, how's it been going so far, actually working with the orchestra in the role of the music director?
Well, you know, this is a strange time to use an understatement to begin a tenure with a symphony orchestra, because, of course, everything is different. Many orchestras around the country, unfortunately, have completely shut it up. It's really... not to be too negative, but it's an existential moment for all of us in the arts world, and I really feel for all of my colleagues around the world who are suffering. And we are very thrilled right now to be able to make music, and I think the musicians are so excited to be back playing music again, and we're doing it in a, of course, socially distanced or physically distanced way. And we've got all kinds of extra bells and whistles, like bell covers and partitions and flute socks and all kinds of things you've never heard of, to make this safe, which means that, you know, not only have they not played together in months, but there are all of these new challenges, and the orchestra has really risen to the occasion. It's hard to hear on the stage. It's hard to interact in the same way it is. And, you know, this orchestra has never filmed a concert and released it online. And I have to say, the professionalism and the flexibility has been incredible, and we're really going to have a great show.
Yeah, well, it's wonderful that you're able to make this music and share it with audiences in spite of all the restrictions that have been imposed on the industry. Talk a little bit about this concert coming up on November 28th. This is your first official public appearance with them as music director, right?
It is, absolutely. And, you know, I had a different opening program before, which was sort of more indicative of the kind of programming I want to do, because it included a female composer, a living composer, you know, a diversity of programming. This one is a great program. It's just, it's more in line with what we can do in this new sort of configuration. But luckily, we're able to fit quite a lot of people on stage. So we've got the Beethoven Fourth Piano Concerto with the fantastic soloist Awadaden Pratt, who is at the College Conservatory of Music in Cincinnati, as well as the Bartok Romanian Folk Dances, which is such an exciting, rhythmic, incredible piece, and Aaron Copland's quintessentially American Appalachian Spring, which, of course, has the famous Simple Gifts Shaker hymn, really a picture of the American prairies, even though he was from New York. It's really got something for everybody, and we're doing it as a broadcast at the Vandel Drive-In Theater, but also online, which, again, we've never done, with multiple cameras and multiple microphones. It's a beautiful production. It will be available behind a paywall online for everybody to see.
Now, explain how this works at a drive-in theater. Do people go just park their cars and listen through the sound system while you perform down front by the screen? How does that work?
No, actually, so it'll all be on the screen. It'll be broadcast just like a film. And the great thing about, you know, the last time I went to a drive-in was literally when The Matrix came out, and you had to put those little speakers inside your car, but it goes through FM. The sound is very clear. You can stay warm in your car, and you've got your heat on, and it's coming through your speakers, and it's a way for us to, of course, be distanced in our little pods in our cars. And I think, you know, it's a strange thing. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. In lieu of applause, people can honk their horns. And, you know, I just want to encourage people this whole year, the organizations you really love, you know, you have to kind of go with us and be flexible and do go a little above and beyond to show your support so that we can survive and keep making this music happen. I mean, we don't want to be doing all of our concerts via drive-in. We want people to be in the hall. But, of course, this is our reality, and so we really appreciate the support of all of our patrons.
Well, it is interactive in a sense that you talk about people honking their horns. You know, you can... I don't know if the snack bar is going to be open, but you can certainly bring your own if you need to, I assume.
Absolutely. Actually, it will be open, and yes, you can bring anything you want in your car as long as you don't smuggle anybody in the trunk.
Right, exactly. All paying customers. You mentioned your programming philosophy that you want to highlight diversity. Can you talk more about that and perhaps what the future would hold programming-wise from you?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, it's the right thing to do. But second of all, I think that, you know, people are always saying, oh, classical music is exclusively for retired people, or it's losing its base, or this and that. I think it's nonsense, and people have been saying that for decades and centuries, actually. But I think that we need to program music that is current and that speaks to our current world. You know, there are new operas about the war in Afghanistan or about, you know, all kinds of different things that really speak to us today. That's not to say that Beethoven and Brahms are not always going to be universally understood and relevant throughout all of time. They are, but we also need to realize all music was once new music. Beethoven was seen as a radical, wild, crazy modern composer in his day. And I think, so what I want to do is I want to highlight those great composers of Europe in the past, but also show the diversity of classical music from not only today, but also from years past, and highlight some of these composers that, for whatever reason, might have been neglected or forcefully kept out of the industry. William Grant Still and Florence Price were two composers that were going to be heavily featured in my February program, which had to unfortunately change. But yeah, in a nutshell, I really I want to show people the complete palette of classical music and support those artists who are currently alive and currently making music.
Yeah. Now, you're taking over Grafton Beck, who was there for 20-plus years. There's a big legacy involved there with the Lima Symphony. And this may play a little bit into what you've just been saying, but where do you want to take this orchestra as an ensemble, and what role do you see it playing in the community during your tenure?
Well, I think the interesting thing about this orchestra is that it's a mix of different kinds of people. You have people who have been in the orchestra for a very long time and who are local or quasi-local, who are really sort of connected to this community. And then you have people from Cleveland and Cincinnati and Detroit and Fort Wayne and all of these places coming in. There are so many incredibly talented musicians in this region. It's one of the richest regions anywhere. So I think the balance is to continue to you know, support the artistic quality of the orchestra while really remaining vital to this community and relevant to this community. So finding venues to do concerts in that are really local, and to find music and sort of programming that is really relevant to people here as well. So it's sort of a fine line. And luckily, I've got a lot of people to help me out to tell me about this community as I am new here and as I am learning. And unfortunately, on this trip, I'm not able to meet as many people as I'd like because of the world we live in. But I think that's really the key.
Yeah. Well, there's plenty of time for meeting people,
that's
I'm
right.
sure, as we go along. Speaking of which, have they given you any free time? Have you gotten your hands on a QP burger yet, or are you still waiting for that?
I finally did two days ago, and
okay.
I was pretty impressed. It was pretty delicious.
So you're gonna stay, is what you're saying. You're good with that.
I'm sold on the QP.
Yeah. Now, you are of a younger generation of conductors. I know some of the work you've done in the past has been geared towards trying to engage younger audiences, and even going down to the level of music education and working in the schools and working directly with kids. Can you talk about, first of all, your ideas for introducing classical music to a younger audience? And secondly, the role that you see yourself and the symphony playing in that community there in Lima in music education.
I'm glad you bring this up because I truly believe it's the most vital thing that we do. And it's, you know, some people say you've got to educate the kids and get them hooked so they can be ticket buyers in the future. Well, I don't really care as much about that as I do the fact that music is valuable and the arts are valuable to human beings. It creates empathy, it creates cultural understanding, it's enriching for your entire life. And the unfortunate truth is that today, kids these days, I hate to say kids these days, but you know, we don't have the Looney Tunes anymore. And frankly, that was what introduced so many kids to classical music. It was fully integrated into everything they were watching. And it's not as much in the cultural zeitgeist as it was. And so we're at a disadvantage, and I think it's our responsibility to expose them to that music, but to also understand that classical music is one kind of music, Western classical music. And I think kids need to be exposed to good music of all kinds, and there's no superiority to Western classical music. And but I do believe in the power of that music. And so I just urge everybody who's listening, you know, if you've got kids, expose them to stuff that maybe you don't really even care to listen to, because, you know, kids need that variety when they're growing up. I was really blessed to have that growing up. I had every different kind of music playing on my parents' stereo. And I think that's why I'm a musician today, is because I just heard that diversity of music, and support them when they want to play cello or oboe or whatever it may be, because it's really, it makes you a better person, makes you better academically. It's just better all around for you.
You mentioned being exposed to different kinds of music growing up. You're from Kansas City, right, originally?
That's right.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey to being a conductor? I mean, were you an instrumentalist, or when did you get involved in conducting?
Well, I had really no idea anything about the classical music industry or the job market, really, until I kind of went and did my master's, to be honest. But the first point was that I had music all around me at home, and both my parents and both my step-parents have very good ears, and they can, you know, they can sing. My stepfather is actually a rock musician, so I would hear all the classic jazz, classic rock. My mom loved the choral orchestral stuff, Mozart Requiem. You know, she loved Christina Aguilera and Eminem, and she says everything imaginable. And so I had this ear, and when it came time to join band, my dad had a trumpet already that he had played in high school, so that was my instrument, and I was just hooked. I knew I wanted to do it. I just didn't know really even what conducting was all about, because I wasn't in youth symphony. I didn't really take private lessons from any teacher that could tell me, go to this school or this school. I was pretty much just figuring out as I went along. So really the interest in conducting came in my undergrad when I was a music education major and I started taking the basic conducting class. But more than that, it's when I started playing in orchestras and I realized how amazing this repertoire is. And basically, you have the choice. You can spend your life in a practice room doing the very athletic world of practicing, which is like training for the Olympics every day, or you can spend all your time thinking about music and planning programs and thinking about the structure of it and analyzing it. And that's kind of the way I wanted my life to go.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking with Andrew Crost, who is a newly designated music director of the Lima Symphony Orchestra. And Andrew, we certainly wish you all the best for your tenure. I wonder if there's just any kind of message that you'd like to leave with your audience as you start your music directorship?
Well, I suppose I would just say that, you know, during this unprecedented time, I hope that you all are like me and you've realized how much the arts are valuable to us. And, you know, we all flock to Netflix during these times because we want some kind of art in our lives. And so I really do hope that you support your local arts organizations, both with your tickets and with your dollars, because they're truly vital in your community. And we're so happy to have your support. And I hope to see you all in the concert hall very soon.
The first concert coming up on November 28th, the Lima Symphony Orchestra with the fantastic pianist Avedajan Pratt performing Beethoven Piano Concerto No. 4. You've also got Bartok's Romanian Folk Dances and the Appalachian Springs Suite of Aaron Copland. There's more information. You can read all about Andrew. You can read all about the season of the Lima Symphony at their website, limasymphony.com. Andrew, I know that it's a little difficult to introduce yourself by phone, but you've got a standing invitation when the pandemic is over to come up here and join us in the studios, and we'll see how it's going.
I would love to do that.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for speaking with us today. Andrew Krust from the Lima Symphony Orchestra here on FM 91.
Thank you very much.